Welcome to the Outsource Accelerator podcast. This is a short format podcast where we explore business and outsourcing mastery. My name is Derek Gallimore, and I am really excited to bring you the leading podcast in outsourcing. Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Outsource Accelerator podcast. My name is Derek Gallimore, and this is episode number 197. So today we talk to Michelle Bubke of Offshore Intelligence. This is a boutique outsourcing firm here in Manila. So Michelle, though, goes back long before Offshore Intelligence. She started outsourcing in 2006 with a pretty interesting business model. So we talk in this episode to Michelle about her background in outsourcing, and we dive into her vast experience. And there's a lot of learning here for anyone that's interested in outsourcing, new to outsourcing, or even an expert in outsourcing already. So I'm sure you will enjoy this. If you want to get in touch with Michelle or know any more about this episode, go to our show notes, which is at outsourceaccelerator.com/197. Enjoy. Hi, and welcome back, everybody. Today, I'm joined by Michelle Bubke of Offshore Intelligence. Hi, Michelle. How are you?
I'm great. Derek, how's yourself?
Fantastic, and thank you for joining us. So, Michelle, we have known each other for some time now. We are both bumping around Manila here, spending a bit of time in the Philippines. But you have kind of vast experience in all types of offshoring. I really want to kind of dive into your personal background and professional background. And you also, I believe, founded Offshore Intelligence. So really excited to hear about that. But I suppose initially, to better introduce it and encapsulate it, how did you find yourself in Manila?
Well, it's a kind of a long story, so I'll give you the short version. About 2006, I owned a debt collection agency in Australia, and I had a lot of blue chip clients and banks and telcos globally, but mainly servicing the Australian market. And we actually hit an unemployment where unemployment was at its lowest it's ever been. So I was really struggling to find talent. And in the art of debt collection, we only make money if we collect debts, and we need people to collect debts. So I was grateful enough that a couple of my clients were had just started offshoring in India, and one of my other banking clients had just put a very small test team in the Philippines. So I had a bit of a chat to those, and I went and did some due diligence in India and also in the Philippines. And then I decided to set up shop in the Philippines, and I started with my first five agents out at Eastwood City.
Wow. So, and previously you were doing debt collection, I suppose, the traditional way in Australia with the Australian cost base?
Absolutely. So I had a team of 100 in my call center in Brisbane, and we had, like I said before, a lot of the blue chip clients, the banks and the telcos in Australia, in the Australian market. So my entire workforce was Australian based at that point in time, yeah.
Right. And this was about 12 years ago then. So it was kind of the younger days of outsourcing. It wasn't quite as developed as now. And the Philippines was sort of slightly kind of a bit more rough around the edges, I suppose. What was your initial thoughts about outsourcing, about the Philippines, compared to maybe your experience a year later?
Initially, I actually thought it wasn't for the medium businesses, which I was. I thought it was only for the big banks and the big players. So the first time that I landed in the Philippines, the culture was extremely aligned. I think the accents were something that I knew that wouldn't be a disadvantage to communication, which debt collection relies a lot on. And I think, you know, the challenges that I had at the start were definitely – just debt collection is not an easy topic. It's not an easy art or an easy skill set. So I call it an art, really, and art needs to be taught. So I would definitely say that finding the training times took a lot longer than I anticipated. There were a few connectivity issues all those years ago, which now just don't exist. And, I think also allowing the Australian market to understand the viability of utilising the Philippines. 12 years ago it wasn't that accepted, and I believe that the Australian market had gone through a lot of, issues with the, you know, the do not call register wasn't out then, and we were getting bundled into all of that. So there were several challenges that we just don't face anymore in the sector. Yeah.
And you say you were a medium-sized business. You had a big business with 100 Australian staff. And your impression of outsourcing back then was you were kind of excluded from the benefits of outsourcing because you weren't kind of big enough. And I think now still, even though, you know, it's becoming more accessible to even smaller businesses, even one-person startups, everyone can get involved. But I think there's still this impression that people think outsourcing is just for the big boys, for the international conglomerates. Was it just your impression, or when you got here, was it the fact that infrastructure was really only set up for the big boys still?
I think it was a bit of both. My impression was, how on earth did I do business in another country? I didn't have, my company was, it grew organically. So there weren't investors and deep pockets, and I had to really do it on a budget. And the flip side was that was the telephony and also the risk. Risk played a huge part for me because I had to, with many of my blue chip clients, I had to demonstrate that we had mitigated risk from a myriad of things, from privacy, data protection, all of those kind of things. So the perception was, I think, partly infrastructure, partly in my sector, there was not a lot of talent already trained in debt collection. So I really had to bring that to the Philippines. It wasn't very common. And then the infrastructure was not, the latency was quite a bit of an issue years ago, but it's not that problem anymore though.
Right, right. And has that changed now, 12 years later? Do you still see that there are kind of the same barriers for startups and smaller SMEs that want to get into outsourcing? Or have you seen the industry has, provided a whole spectrum of services now?
I think the reluctance for people to consider it is now perceived in terms of they still have these same concerns that I had years ago. What I believe the difference is now, in my personal experience with offshore intelligence, I'm able to hold their hands. I've been here, I've done that, I've made the mistakes, and I understand the risk, and I'm able to help them work out not just how to hire the right staff, but also how to run process, whether it's a blended model, or they want to put a lot of offshore, or they want to put some of it offshore. And so I think that perception is still there, but the solution is a lot easier than it was 10 years ago.
Yeah, because I think, I preach this as well as I think you do, that, it's not just people don't just get a bum on a seat or, correct, whatever it is, a call center operative. They're actually buying into the 20, 25 years of executive experience that the Philippines has. And equally with, your BPO, offshore intelligence, it has your direct experience, it has your oversight and your input into the processes and the expertise of those agents. Yeah.
Correct, exactly. And I think, the biggest barrier that we come across really is, it's a fear-based barrier, to be completely frank. It's often about, it's a fear-based and fear of the unknown. So, I think once we find clients dip their toe in the water, the world opens for them and they grow quite rapidly inside our organization. And but it's a lot easier for them these days because we take care of all of that for them. They just have to worry about the output. And that wasn't the case when I was around. It was a lot different.
Yeah, I agree. And I think this is what the industry needs to do. It just needs to make it a lot easier for people to dip their toe in, doesn't it? And just get engaged and try a little bit of outsourcing so that they're kind of on that journey. And I think it's that initial apprehension, the initial unknowns, the initial kind of perceived risks, as you say.
Absolutely. And a part of it I also think is an education. The clients that we have seen that succeed extraordinarily well, they don't just see it as a set and forget. It's not like you say, it's not, oh, I'm just going to have five bums on seats. They're committed to training. They're committed to their culture of their, their ethos, and they're committed to choosing the right talent that matches what they're looking for. They see it as a long-term investment and a solution versus I'm going to give it a try for 3 weeks and see if it works. I think that's when we partner with clients that feel safe, we're holding their hand, they're more likely to actually see it as a long-term journey and invest in those critical key points that will then lead it to become a success.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose that sort of slightly segues into one of my kind of pet topics at the moment. What is the difference between outsourcing and things like Upwork and Fiverr and Freelancer? You know, I see it as worlds apart because there's a professionalism, there is the oversight that you provide. And I think, unfortunately, people can try a bit of Upwork, they can get, you know, a bit of a dodgy contractor experience and then say all of outsourcing is broken. Do you get those kind of experiences where people are dipping their toe in, but maybe not in the right waters?
Absolutely. And this is a question that, you know, we get asked quite often. And, you know, the Upworks of the world have their place, but I think they're personally better for micro businesses and project-based work, not building a solid workforce to grow and expand your organization. And I think that's the difference. You know, an offshoring model means that we get very heavily involved in finding the right match. We take care of all of the payroll and all those kind of things that people don't have to worry about. The other thing is we make sure that you're getting the right price. I see a lot of clients that have tried to build teams on Upwork and those great, you know, those freelancer sites, and they're paying rates that are just, you know, insane. And you know, they have their place, but I think they're more for quick project works versus wanting to build a solid talent offshore. And in the investment and the actual execution model is extraordinarily different. They are worlds apart, as you said.
Yeah, it's kind of a short-term view, short-term project versus long-term kind of scalable
Absolutely.
expansionary plan, isn't it? And
Absolutely.
your thoughts on staff being within an office environment versus remote staffing?
Great question. I personally, and you probably agree with me on this, Philippine culture is very much family orientated and bonding. You know, it's something that, and it's similar, I guess, to an Australian, you know, organization. A lot of people love the camaraderie. They love the think tank of being around a lot of their colleagues. So that's the one thing, is it's definitely the culture. The second thing is it allows us to keep an eye on productivity and compliance. And compliance is one of the critical things that I think that sometimes people overlook a little bit when they are selecting how to build an offshore team. You know, we in Australia need to be compliant to the privacy data protection, all of those kind of things. So, you know, we don't allow cell phones on the floor or mobile phones on the floor. And that's just not about increasing productivity of agents. That's also making sure that privacy is protected, intellectual property is protected. So you don't get that in a work from home employee as rule of thumb. You know, a lot of our clients are heavily, I guess, governed around legislation. So having them within our environment with our biometric and, you know, the physical security that we have, and then also, you know, the policies and procedures around mitigating risk and protecting IP and branding, all those kind of things, they all get taken care of, which is something that's a lot harder to manage if it's a work from home employee.
Yeah, and again, there's a sort of scalability issue, isn't there? I think just, you know,
Absolutely.
trying to train disaggregated staff, it's kind of a nightmare, isn't it? Whereas things happen more organically if everyone's in the same office together.
And not to mention the connectivity. You know, as you know, everyone has backup. To their backup in inside of an office, whereas, you know, a work from home employee, everyone just has their one connection. If that goes down, they're down, they're offline.
Yeah, of course. And so, kind of harking back to your history, it was, I mean, you were a leader in terms of the debt collection functions, but you know, a lot of outsourcing started in the kind of call center and voice functions, and now it's expanded a lot from there. But there's quite a hangover from this voice thing, in that, you know, if you mention the Philippines, people go, oh my God, you know, roll their eyes, and they remember back to a conversation with their bank, and they just weren't able to have their needs met. Do you think there's a hangover from 15, 20 years ago with these call centers that weren't properly trained, didn't have the skill sets that they do now, and there's kind of a hangover and a stigma that the industry needs to work hard to remove?
Look, there is a little bit, and you know, when I come up against it, I use the same analogy as if, you know, if you get a bad cup of coffee, you don't stop drinking coffee, you find a different coffee provider. And, you know, offshoring and building offshore talent, so much on the key to making it work is in the execution. And you know, but I, you know, and I literally come across this just last week in a conversation where they were saying, oh, you know, back 5 years ago, I phoned and this didn't happen. I'm like, yeah, but that also happens in Australia. You know, it happens anywhere. I think that we tend to like to lump it on an offshore excuse, but the reality is it's got nothing to do with whether the talent's in the Philippines, America, Australia, you know, it doesn't really matter. It's up to the organisations and the execution and their internal infrastructure to make sure that their customer experience is aligned with their company ethos, no matter where their employees are. So there is a bit of the hangover, but I find that it's easily overcome by putting a lot of the onus back on the organisations to understand that they need to invest that time in their people, no matter where they are placed in the world.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think, again, the industry has matured so much since the last sort of 15, 20 years, and that has markedly improved, isn't it? Okay, yeah. And then so I want to get you back and really, you know, to deep dive into offshore intelligence. Your website really is great. I haven't commended you on that before, but there's like lots of moving images and lots of text, and it really does keep you entertained. But
that's my marketing talent.
Yeah, it's amazing. I recommend people go and have a look. So the elevator pitch, though, what differentiates offshore intelligence, and what are your, you know, where are your niches and value adds?
Look, I would say that we're definitely a boutique BPO, and we really do focus on candidate short markets in the Australian workforce. My business partner owns a recruitment company in Australia, so we get to see what is going on in the market and where they're short. So first of all, that's finding, you know, industry candidate short markets. The second thing is that we are very, very heavily involved in setting up the KPIs and, I guess, the alignment and holding our clients' hands to build their offshore teams versus here's five staff, here's where they sit, you take care of the rest. So we have a lot more of operational involvement at the beginning so that it really works. And that's just not aligning the clients to the Philippine talent. That's also making sure that the clients are also giving what the Philippine talent needs in order to succeed. So we're all about setting it up to succeed and moving forward with our clients in that way.
Yeah, well done. And I think like it's often underestimated by the clients quite how much training the actual clients need, yeah, in this new journey.
Absolutely. They need a lot of hand holding, which is great. You know, that's what we're here for. That's what our role is, to facilitate that so their journey does succeed. So they don't have that set and forget mentality. And that takes an education process for them as well.
Absolutely. Okay, now I'm excited to get you back and discuss that. Thank you so much, Michelle. If anyone wants to connect with you or learn any more about offshore intelligence, how can they do that?
Just shoot me an email. It's just michelleb@offshoreintelligence.com.au.
Fantastic, and we'll have that in the show notes. That was Michelle Bubke of Offshore Intelligence. If you want to get in touch with Michelle or know any more about this episode, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/197. And as always, if you want to ask us anything, then just send us an email to ask@outsourceaccelerator.com. See you next time.